Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast, the home of the glizzy. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny, and I love me sucking down some glizzies.
And welcome to our annual spooky special, Dreaming with Freddy. This year we are reviewing every Nightmare on Elm Street movie in reverse. This week we are reviewing Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warrior, and Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. Of course, John will give us the plot in five words.
Which I wonder... Huh? What is his revenge, right? questions that'll never be answered.
Yeah. Didn't they allude to it that it's his revenge on the kids? He's against the kids. He hates the kids.
He hates the kids, even though he's clearly in love with one of them. Also, forgive me. I know we don't like to discuss how the glizzies are made on our podcast, yeah. But. I finally have my new aligners for my braces, and I might have a slight lisp.
That's okay. Yeah.
It makes biting down on glizzies kind of difficult.
Yeah. But who was Freddy really after? Was he after not Nancy, though? You're talking about.
Nope.
Definitely Nancy.
Not Nancy.
He barely even, like, gave her a look in the third Dream Warrior movie. He was more into the boy,
I noticed that we would try not to talk about it, but it is very surprising that in the second one, considering the era the movie came out, that they didn't take the opportunity to call our protagonist a Nancy.
Oh, that would have been too good.
Probably way, way, way too on the nose. Because the movie did try hard to not be super in your face, or rude about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, yeah, we got to talk about the sleepy guys.
Yes, where we will, John will give us the plot in five words, give our first thoughts, then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis, but we will go to the Dream Warriors and... Cool. What you think?
They're gonna say TV corner.
Glizzy corner. No. We know.
Glizzy. Oh man! If only there was a glizzy corner.
In every corner.
Down at so many glizzies.
In every corner, there's a glizzy. All right, John. Do you...
So Rolando and Johnny like to learn new hip lingo words and then use the shit out of them because we're cool.
Yeah. Before we recorded, I said that I wouldn't use that word. So. I've said it like five times in like 3 minutes. So.
And I got to ask, are you craving a glizzy now? Does a glizzy sound pretty nice?
It's been a minute since I've had a glizzy. I got to say, I haven't had a glizzy in a while.
On a pretzel bun?
Oh, yeah.
Pretzel bun, salted pretzel bun.
There you go. I like that. Alrighty. Dream Warriors. John, do you want to give us the plot in five words?
Johnny.
Five words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Noes, which I will reiterate means Nightmare on Elm Street. For Noes, Dream Warriors, coming in at number three, Amanda Kruger is a lying sap.
Yeah. This is watching him.
What a weird reveal for no reason.
Yeah.
A pointless reveal.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two for Noe's Dream Warriors with a fucking killer soundtrack. Larry Fishburne took the blue pill.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. This is what happens when you take the blue pill, folks. You get stuck as an orderly. as a sassy orderly.
Sure.
And coming in at number one for Noe's Dream Warriors. Freddy releases his goofy side.
Yep. I thought... No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's the first time we get like the very tongue-in-cheek Freddy. And I think we were talking about it a little bit before, and we realized when we were younger, and I was also talking to another friend, my friend Clinton, about how this movie popped up a lot, and the fourth and fifth one on television. And I think we grew up with like the TNT era of censored films. So you get the wrong idea what these movies were supposed to be. A completely wrong idea what these movies were supposed to be. Because it almost felt like comedic, like they were trying to appeal to like children and be like, no, Freddy's just goofy.
Right.
But then when you watch the uncensored version, you're like, oh, wow, he says bitch a lot.
So I'll say this, like I did notice that even though the death sequences in this Dream Warriors I thought were more colorful, they were still, yes. Freddy was still portrayed as like gritty and like kind of more menacing than the other movies. So even though, yeah, he's like, you know, pumping kids full of like drugs and stuff like that from his hands and stuff like that, but it's not played for a laugh at all. It's like serious. You know what I mean? No. Like it's about as serious as you're going to get in these movies.
Well, I will agree with that one scene. I do have one liners to suggest the opposite.
Okay.
Of the other deaths.
I'm just saying that, but when we got to like watching, you know, 4 and 5, and even 6, like it's clearly they decided, let's make the most creative kill we can. Whether it not, I felt like these kills were creative, but it still reinforced a cruelty to Freddy that was in character. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, I felt like those scenes were kind of just done to, because, oh, wouldn't it be cool if Freddy's hand was a shark running through the beach and the water? And you know what I mean? It was kind of like,
yeah,
it was, I still felt like this one, which I have to say, I really like this. To me, this is the perfect prototype sequel movie. You know what I mean? If I feel like you,
yeah,
I kind of feel like if you can go from like Nightmare on Elm Street to like Dream Warriors and just skip 2, and it feels like a proper sequel. It feels like a sequel to the thing we just saw.
That is very, very true. Because, well, I will say, like in the second one, though, there's no sort of lighthearted Freddy moments. I mean, that's probably the wrong choice of
words. No, yeah.
There's no, you know, like there's nothing fun about Freddy Krueger in the second one because he's got a mission. He's got his revenge. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what his revenge is.
Yeah.
But, you know, like this one, yeah, I agree. It's very menacing because it has, in my opinion, one of the hardest hitting, probably the hardest hitting death scenes in any of the movies when our punk rock woman who has a drug addiction gets pumped full of heroin, even though she had been clean and was very proud of herself, by Freddy Krueger. And that's how she dies. And I was like, dude, that's fucked up. Like every time I watch that, I'm like, this is like the hardest hitting fucking death in any of these movies.
And even I also thought the, I believe it's not the first one. I think it's the second one. It was one of the other girls where she gets killed by the TV. Looks fantastic. Right. But it is very cruel. Very like,
yeah. Her, I think it's Larry Fishburne finds her, right? And she's hanging up, like she's hanging in the air with her head in the
TV. Smashed into the TV. Yeah.
Yep. At that point, they think the kids are committing suicide, right?
Right. Yeah. They're like, she's out, this girl committed suicide. She smashed her head in the TV. No, it's very wild.
Is she ready?
Yeah. And it's, and I think a lot of this is credited to the fact that Wes Craven was back to write it, and even Frank Darabont, you know, is a fantastic writer director, did Shawshank, did Dreamcatcher, stuff like that. Not Dreamcatcher, excuse me. Was it The Mist? Stuff like that. So he's a great writer, great director. And this was like one of the first things he worked on. So there's definitely like quality behind the scenes, you know, people with rule that
even though
know how to do this stuff.
Even though this introduces Freddy just being so sexist.
Yeah.
Which the second one could kind of explain it a little bit. In this movie, when that girl gets her head smashed into the television, he does say, "Welcome to primetime, bitch."
No, yeah, exactly.
Before he runs her into
the, yeah. It's a line, but it's a funny line, but it's done with like there's a cruelty to it, because then they cut to her body lifelessly hanging from the TV and stuff. Like it's very like intense, very powerful shot. And then they even bring back Nancy or whatever, Heather Langenkamp, to this.
Heather Langenkamp.
Why it feels like a sequel, like a a proper sequel. You know what I mean? Like, kind of like how Alien and Aliens, this feels like a continuation of whatever they were doing in the first movie.
Yeah, that's true. I'm imagining they just didn't want it to be that type of thing. Kind of like Friday the 13th is just like these people are dumb enough to go back to that camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's never the same characters because nobody survives, right?
Right.
I mean, or like one person survives, but they're not dumb enough to go back. But I will also, I just wanted to mention the kind of goofiest one-liner in this movie for me is when the kid in the wheelchair, when he discusses like, oh, in my dreams, I'm the wizard master or whatever. And he's like trying to hurt Freddy. And then Freddy grabs him by the neck and it's like, sorry, kid, I don't believe in fairy tales, and fucking kills him.
Stabs him with a gun. Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
And of course, we should probably mention this is Patricia Arquette's like film debut. And she just in this movie could tell she's going to be a movie star. She's like radiates a movie star.
She's great.
Yeah.
Instead of having her age 10 years randomly and being played by somebody who's a terrible actress.
Yeah. That really was a tragedy. I mean, that's one of the many problems with Dream Master is fucking losing Patricia Arquette. But I think she didn't really didn't have a good time making these movies, and she wanted to do more serious work is what I get from why she didn't return. So. But yeah, no, on test purposes, I think that she was great. They also have one of my favorite 80s, 90s actors who I kind of just forgot. Because, I mean, we talk about this a lot, but like I've seen all these movies, but like it still feels like I'm watching them for the first time. I don't know why, but I don't have them like very vivid. They have Craig Wasson in it, who I always mistake as Bill Maher for some reason. He's like a dead ringer for a young Bill Maher.
Well, it's that like sort of that interesting sort of receding hairline where it's not where the widow's peak is at, but it's on the sides.
Yeah.
It's very Bill Maher-ish.
Yeah, exactly. So
Bill Maher, the scab, right?
The fucking scab. Yeah. Is he really going back? Because I heard that some people backed off that claim.
I don't know.
Who gives a shit? Fuck that guy. Yeah. I don't know. Fuck it.
To begin with, he's never been a nice guy.
So. Yeah, he's always been an asshole. But so I didn't realize that he was like the main guy. I don't know how I just kind of forgot him because I was always like, oh yeah, Patricia Arquette, Lawrence Fishburne, you know. I remember John Saxton. Yeah, I remember everybody else, but I didn't remember this guy was in this fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean John Saxton. I'm always excited to see him, but this is like probably one of his worst roles. Like, hey, you're just a drunk cop at a bar.
Security guard.
And then you're going to have to show us where Freddy's body's at, and then you're going to die, which was probably per John Saxon's request.
He's like, please fucking kill me.
He's like, I was in it. I was in Enter the Dragon. What am I doing here?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was in one Starsky and Hutch episode where I play Dracula.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Holy shit. You're bringing back so many memories. You made me watch that, I think.
I made you watch that, yeah. That's how TV Corner started. Yeah. Yeah. Holy shit, it's crazy. Started with a bang. John Saxton, yeah.
I was just going to say, this was one of the more interesting... installments in the series, because I do remember watching this as a kid and thinking how cool it was, the idea of them being able to develop their mind and psyche enough to control their own dreams, which I thought was super fucking cool.
That idea feels like a natural extension of what Nancy and her friends were trying to do, that Nancy achieved, and for her to go and teach all these, you know, next group of kids to fight Freddy in the dreams, it actually makes, you know, story sense, makes actually sense for the story.
I think there's also another missed opportunity to, how do I put this? Because I don't want to talk about the second one too much, but there was something that I thought of. Okay. What if each of these kids develop some sort of psychic ability because they get stuck on Elm Street or in this town, Springwood, right? And they only have these abilities in this area because of Freddy's pull or whatever. So I think it would have been more interesting to have each of these kids have some sort of psychic ability as long as they're under a certain age.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see what you mean.
But yeah, I don't know. I think they just tried to keep going different directions with each of the movies and it just got worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how, like, you know, it's funny because there's a moment in this where they talk about the origins of Freddy and how he was conceived. And it's really...
Yeah.
It worked.
He's his own dad.
Right. Yeah, he's his own dad. It's really interesting that just hearing about it is kind of like you just... It's much better told because, like, I feel and I feel like 4 and 5 felt lesser now because they actually showed it, actually showed clips of like how all of that transpired, and it just does not work and makes this film feel less because this is like where that idea of how Freddy was conceived, you know, more interesting, I guess. This movie,
yeah, even though Sister Mary
Krueger. Great. Yeah.
Just help him, jerk. Like, you're already there. And everybody can see you for some reason, dead woman. Like, the guy that doesn't believe any of this is happening for half the movie sees you first. Not Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Too busy not believing these kids and just sucking on glizzies, and then he sees Amanda Krueger.
He's kind of a weird choice for this movie. He's just like a weird, it's one of those like really specific 80s thing why he was cast in that part. You know what I mean? Kind of like,
yeah,
Tom Atkins. Yeah. You know how like you and I have this thing where Tom Atkins was cast as like a total fuckboy drinking beers in the car, you know?
Yeah, which is really funny because at this point, they're like, hey, do you want to watch an 80s horror movie? And I was like, is Tom Atkins in it? I don't know who that is. Like, oh, then I'm not going to bother. There's no point
in
watching it if we don't have ultra handsome Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Sleeping with girls that are like 30 years his younger.
Yeah. His senior. So, but yeah, no, because like Tom Atkins has always looked old, you know, because he has like that trimmed, you know, mustache and stuff like that. And I feel like this guy
kind of a large noggin.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Pretty large.
I feel like Craig Wasson, unfortunately, like him in this part is like, I don't know. I think it's just like a total 80s thing where they just like, this is what was around, I guess, at the time. I don't know how to describe. Yeah. I don't know how to quite frame that thought, but
it occurs to me, I think this is the first, this would be the first movie in the franchise where there wasn't any sort of love interest story or anything like that. Like they just chalked that all out.
I low-key think that they try to get Nancy and Neil, who's the Craig Wasson character, They're kind of hinting that they're kind of romantically involved.
Oh.
They hint at it. It's never explicitly said.
I could kind of see that, but I also chalked it up to they were actually trying hard to help these kids, and that's what mattered most.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I also loved that the reintroduction of Nancy.
You know what? I'm a liar. There is a love story here. I don't know, Neil and Amanda Krueger had a thing.
Yeah.
They had a thing the entire movie.
Nobody else saw it but him. Yeah.
Exactly, because that's what love is. Right?
That's what love
when
is.
You're the only person.
You see value in that person.
Would you share a glizzy with this person? That's what love is.
Opposite end, glizzy eating, meet in the middle. Lady and the Tramp style.
Lady and the Tramp. Well, yeah. With the glizzy.
Extra onions. Now, I'll say, one of my favorite scenes in this movie is the reintroduction of Nancy. It's for the Patricia Arquette. You know, she's being put in that ward or whatever. And she's freaking out. And then it just, like, cuts to Nancy looking older. And she has like, fun hair now, big curly puffy hair and stuff, very 80s hair, yeah, in like a work suit and shit. I was like, fuck yeah, Nancy's back.
So kind of like awful like age makeup,
yeah,
like every once in a while, and then they just kind of give up on it.
They did. Yeah, because I was like, how old is she really supposed to be from the events of the first movie? And I'm thinking like, I think it's only like 3 years later or something, because
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she's already like a doctor, stuff like that. So, but yeah, she looks like this aged doctor or student or I don't know. I forget the, but she was, she went into the study of dreams and psychiatry or something, right? That's why she's trying to help the kids again, which is kind of like said, but then immediately dropped because it's just like, oh, we need, Nancy needs to help, is going to help these kids, you know, fight Freddy in the dreams and stuff.
And what an interesting thing that I forgot about, that, I know I said we're going to talk about the second
one. You're the only one talking about the second one, John.
I know. Yeah. Because in the second one, they mention what happens to Nancy's mother, which is kind of strange that.
Yeah, they did.
Drop, but like Nancy's mother commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, we all know for a fact, because we've all seen the movie, in the first one, there's a cliffhanger throwaway ending where she gets sucked through the window. And I'm wondering if that's the moment when that happened, but we're never going to know because it's never explained.
Yeah, that was just like a last scare moment, you know. But yeah, they did. They kind of play fast and loose on the mother being dead and then we see her again and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, a lot of these movies, unfortunately, that have multiple sequels, they're not really written with the idea of continuing on. They're just literally just written the time so they can make money and, you know, move on and make the next one faster and cheaper.
And do they ever so get fast and cheap by the time you hit fucking six?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not six or five or whatever.
Yeah. Six is kind of like the low point, I think. Yeah.
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 I mean, they didn't know what to do for the credits, so they just have a supercut of all the best scenes of every movie.
So. Yeah, I mean, from what I get from the documentary, they really were pushing the idea that this was going to be the last one, and it kind of is. It's the last like proper Nightmare on Elm Street movie before Freddy versus Jason and stuff. So you know, so
even though like the way Freddy finally. I want to say it's like the first time they're like, they use some sort of like, oh, this has got to work. And then it works. It's like something I didn't remember about the series is how religious it kind of feels.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Like they use holy water to, I'm not good with religious, of consecrate the remains.
To fight that evil. Expression? Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Defile. Yeah. Defile the remains. I think that's the proper terminology. Defile the
yeah,
because they decided to bury Freddy's burnt bones in the back of a badass caddy that is still in the same junkyard many years later, like, because that's how junkyards work. Once you put that shit there, it's there forever. They never move it.
Yeah. Is that canon that it was that's where they put the bones?
I think it does kind of check out, because everybody assumes that the bones were still in the furnace or the boiler room that they threw him in.
Mm-hmm.
But then John Saxon was like, no, well, we moved the bones for whatever fucking reason and put them over here.
Mm.
Because then in the fourth one, in the dream sequence, that's where his body comes back again.
Well, yeah, his whatever appears again, right? Like his skeleton. He's able to use his skeleton to fight Neil and John Saxon, which is weird, right?
Yes, which is kind of strange. Yeah. Again, another moment where like Freddy's killing people outside of dreams.
Oh yeah, we'll get there. Like, yeah,
doesn't follow the rules again. But
at least that one kind of makes sense, though. No, I mean it's his bones, so I don't know. I don't know. There's a little.
But then why wouldn't he have done that before? You know, like why?
Yeah.
And then why is he like, oh wow, got these two guys super tired, gonna go back now.
Yeah.
Which, a couple of things. So it's cool that Freddy Krueger is a deadite, because I'm a huge fan of the Dead series. Yeah. So that's pretty badass.
Yeah.
And then two, is he neighbors with that one ghost from 13 Ghosts?
Yeah.
That's where they bury all the bad people, like the evil people. Even though that ghost in 13 Ghosts was probably the only one that wasn't an evil person until they died. Oh, no, it was the white guy. Never mind. I'm thinking of the wrong ghost. Different movie, doesn't matter. but yeah, what is there to say? You know, this was
a nice sequel.
My favorite movie in the series for the longest time. And it's still really, really good. It's just not maybe I've seen it too many times at this point, but I was like, oh, okay, this movie happens a lot faster than I remember.
This is a great sequel movie. Like this is a great continuation of the first one. And I would have liked, like, I think if this series was just like, you know, the first Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and then New Nightmare, that's a hell of a trilogy. That'd be totally unrecognizable.
Oh, that'd be pretty rad. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that'd be a great trilogy of movies. And I think that's kind of what Wes Craven kind of wanted to do with the franchise always, kind of this self-parody thing he ended up doing towards the latter half of his career. But yeah, no, I mean, this movie was a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of, it's a really good sequel. I don't think there's really like, and plus like all the deaths I thought were really good too. Which we can get into a bit, like
fun. None of them are boring.
Yeah, they all specifically like the one that I thought was you know, the one that hit me a little differently this time was the first one with the kid that to use him kind of like as a marionette. He's like walking him around the psych ward.
I vividly remember that from childhood too. I'm like, oh my god, it's fucking scary. Like using your own tendons and shit to like marionette your way.
Ooh, yeah, great. Use of it.
It seemed like he killed himself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, for whatever reason, I thought these kids were like, and I mean, it could just be just, I don't remember this movie very well, but I thought the kids had more scenes in the movie as dream, quote unquote, dream warriors, but they really don't. They're kind of just.
No, not really. They figure it out in the 11th hour. And I think that was like the idea. It probably wasn't intentional, but it's a very clever idea that probably wasn't intentional again, where when push comes to shove, they're like, oh fuck, we got to do this or we die. And then they figure it out.
Right. Yeah.
Cause they all have, other problems and issues outside of that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Cause they're all in this hospital trying to get help.
Right.
So this is them overcoming each of their deepest like problems, I guess. I mean, some are pretty obvious, like the nerdy kid in a wheelchair. Oh, he can walk now, and he's like able to have confidence to feel cool and be a wizard, which is like, you're gonna fucking die, dude, because you're a dweeb, you know. But dweebs don't live, bro.
Yeah.
No.
Or Joey too, right? Joey can talk. What, Joey can talk, right? Is it Joey that can talk? Joey can talk in his dreams.
And then he's able to kind of save the day mm-hmm. by screaming and talking. And then I forgot the other guy's name. He's the other guy that comes out on the sequel and dies right away.
Kincaid.
Like, I think he always, like he had a, Kincaid, he had a chip on his shoulder because he always felt inferior and weak. And then in his dreams, he's like super, super strong and feels confident. Yeah. So the other thing is like, I actually don't really love the way, Heather Langenkamp dies. And I know
it's exactly like, what I was about to say, dude. That was about to say the fucking did her dirty. Yeah.
A little cheap. Yeah. A little cheap. And I understand it was probably her choice. Like, hey, can you please kill me off or whatever, but make me like what helps these kids overcome this obstacle of Freddy.
Yeah.
Which ultimately is, you know, in vain because they made several other movies.
From what I understand, it was Wes Craven's, idea to kill her because he says, I think it's something along the lines, it was like he created her so he wanted to kill her, so that was kind of it. Yeah, it's Wes Craven. One of the unfortunate things is Wes Craven was never really a fan of these movies. Like, he never wanted to have a sequel. It was more just like New Line fucking had a big hit and fucking was like, we gotta pump these movies out. And so Wes Craven,
because to be fair, regardless of how much you love this series, if that was your first movie and then they made these movies, I'd be like, what the fuck did they do to my story?
Yeah, and I think
it is cool in retrospect and after the fact, but at the moment I think I would be like, dude, what is this? Why?
I think that we live in a time where people are more like sensitive to the idea that like, let's try to plan for the future, let's try to sequelize things and to bad degrees. There's been a lot of shit too, where it's just like, oh, we're going to make all these great IPs and all this other stuff. Of course, there's like a negative to it, but I think there's a lot more care being taken to movies that like, oh, we're going to make a sequel, we're going to do this. And I think it's just at that time, this just wasn't really a thing. You know, nobody was really thinking like we could make these franchises and make series of movies with connecting plots and people will go watch them all and stuff like that, you know? So I think we're kind of, that's kind of one of the unfortunate things with a lot of these like horror movies is not having that foresight of like, let's create a big franchise with great, you know, deep story with great, you know, mythos and, you know, connect all these dots and subtle things. And you know what I mean? Like that's not really what's in these series.
But in this series defense, I will say it did allow each of the directors to be as creative as they wanted because they're like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, you know,
yeah.
We see a lot of other movies, like let's say like Saw, you're kind of held on to the idea that it's just going to be torture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do anything creative. I mean, you can make the torture devices more and more creative, but ultimately you know exactly what the thing is going to be.
Yeah. And I'm not a big Saw fan or anything, but I do, from what I understand, I haven't seen a lot of those movies either. I think I've only seen the first one, to be honest. but from what I understand, they do try to like have a continuing storyline there once they started sequelizing them.
They do have like a very clever, kind of like Final Destination, kind of clever twist where you're like, oh, didn't expect that.
Right. Yeah.
Like one of them is a prequel and you would have never have guessed until the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh shit. They didn't catch that. I guess that was a bad example. Hostel.
Yeah, fuck Hostel. Wrong turn.
It's the same fucking thing over and over. Yeah, wrong turn. Over and over again, the same exact thing.
Or like the series we'll probably never do is Friday 13th because it's just sequel after sequel after sequel, you know? So.
Oh, wow. So here's a little disagreement we have. I truly love that series too. It has got some of the most, I mean, the one through line that's the same is Jason just kills people, but everything else about those movies is like so funny.
Yeah. Really fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Jason Takes Manhattan. He's in Manhattan for the last 15 minutes of the fucking movie. he kills somebody with a, like an explorer style guitar, which doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, oh my God. I do like two of the movies in the Friday the 13th series don't even involve Jason Voorhees at all.
Yeah. No, you're
and
right.
It's like, I think the first and then like the third or fourth one or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm not trying to like say that the series isn't less in any way. Like, everything you're saying is correct. Like, there's a lot of fun to be had in those movies. It's just like, for our show, it would be a daunting task to watch all those movies. So
let us know in the comments below if you want to force Rolando to watch the entire Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
We're going to put a poll on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Cool.
I guess we should move on.
Yeah. Do you have any last thoughts? For we rate it?
No, just like an overall fun movie. Like, it's a movie I can watch over and over again because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Alrighty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Rolando. Sexy spooky bones. No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Dream Warriors 7 sexy spooky dream bones.
I'm going to go higher. I actually really liked it. Like I said, like I was impressed with it that like this is a great sequel movie. Like if you're as a template to do sequels, you would follow the formula I think that they kind of laid out. I'm going to give it 9 sexy spooky bones. Alrighty, John, let's move to our next review of Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Noe's Freddy's Revenge, coming in at number 3. Sexiest entry in series.
Yes, it's the horniest movie in this franchise.
Coming in at number 2 for Freddy's Revenge from the Noe series. Elm Street in South Texas.
Oh, well.
Because allegedly these people can't handle 97 degree weather.
Yeah. It's true.
This movie was hot. Coming in at number 1 for Freddy's Revenge from the Noe's series. Everyone wants the new kid.
Yeah.
Everybody's so horny for this one guy that just wants to be left alone.
To just hang out with his sleepover at his best friend's house, Grady.
His best friend Grady that they try to make it seem like they had a conflict with each other at the beginning.
Oh, no, yeah.
It is so obvious that Grady has a crush on him.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I feel like there's a missed opportunity, but, you know, it's the 80s, so of course they're not going to do this, where he needed both of them to be able to defeat Freddy at the end. I think that would have been a lot, made more sense and a lot cooler.
Threesome, kinky. Yes.
Oh yeah. Clearly he's gay.
He's gay.
But he's clearly like either bi or pansexual. Like there's no.
Yeah. Of course, like anybody that's a horror fan knows that like movie has a lot of homoerotic scenes and tones, and which is kind of wild for a Nightmare on Elm Street movie and the 80s for it to take place. I think a lot of it is credit to the fact the writer wrote it and it was supposed to be, in his words, subtle. It's supposed to be subtle, but there's not a lot of subtlety.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which director of this movie we're revisiting because he was the director of a movie we have reviewed called The Hidden.
Oh, no shit. With Kyle MacLachlan. Yeah. No shit. Wow. That movie, The Hidden, was better. So, to be honest, but
oh wow! So I knew we were going to disagree on this. So the reason I don't want to talk about this movie too much is because, in my opinion, this is leaps and bounds a far superior movie to the rest of the franchise.
Okay, well, why do you think that?
Not including the first one yet. Not including
the first one. Why do you say that?
Everything about it, because it was aside from the story starting to fall apart because you can see it being rushed. There's just so much detail. Like, there's so much detail in they changed the way Freddy Krueger kind of looked because they're trying to go with, like, everything is super hot or whatever. Like, so his skin is more of, like, a burn victim. They made his eyes red to look more demonic, so he seems more evil. He is not very funny in this movie at all. He's very straightforward, like, sadistic killer and using this poor kid as a vessel to murder all these people. This kid is having a hard time just, you know, he's not even trying to find acceptance. I know that's what's supposed to be the underlining, you know, meaning of the movie, but he is just trying to find anybody that's going to believe him, or, you know, he's having a hard time accepting what's going on around him. And then on top of that, it almost feels like because he keeps rejecting everybody, the movie presents it like everybody's picking on him, but clearly everybody has a fucking crush on him. It's like, including the coach, like everybody has a crush on this kid. I don't know. The more I was watching it, the more I was like, holy shit, this movie's like, for the longest time, I thought it was the worst one in the series. Like, I did not like this movie, and now it's probably going to be my favorite, is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I know the first one is like, oh my God, super good. But yeah, that's where I'm at with this one.
Okay. Yeah. And for me, I think it is, I'm just looking at, forget about like all of the recontextualizing they've done about this movie, just watching it. Like if I'm just sitting, watching this movie, I don't know anything else about anything, I'm just watching it. I think that its story's hard to follow. It looks, you know, it's not like the most, it's kind of a hard story to follow, which is why I think there's so much reasons you can interpret things in this movie. That are, some of it's blatant, some of it's not blatant. So like we're kind of like
which which might help its case in the horrible story.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could argue a couple of things. I think we talked about it a little bit. I just wanted to mention that real quick. Like, because you're going to get at, like, Freddy killing people outside of dreams, which is like, that was the whole establishing point of the first movie, is he is somebody that is murdering people in their dreams.
That's his, which, of course, clever revenge.
Do you want to go a little bit into just a little bit, because we're probably going to talk about it a lot more when we do the first movie, where the idea of this movie came from, or the idea of Freddy Krueger?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead. Just explain it real quick. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to ask if you could do it, because you probably remember it better than I do.
Oh, I think you know the Freddy
case study.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like full. You mean like the because Wes Craven was reading the LA Times and he was reading about how these, I believe it was Indonesia or India or something like that. There was like
somewhere there. Yeah,
there was these people who were claiming that they were dying while dreaming, so they didn't want to sleep, so they were leaving their country and coming to LA because of that, because there was like this irrational fear in their study, and a lot of them did die because when they actually did fall asleep, they did die in their sleep, from what I understand. And it was chronicled for like over 2 or 3 years or something, and it's something Wes Craven read in the newspaper, people dying in their dreams, that he thought was a good jumping off point for a horror movie and stuff like that.
Great. Yeah. Like an amazing idea. I mean, unfortunately based in truth, which is very scary.
Yeah. There's like I forget what it's called. There's like a certain thing that there's of course a medical technical term for it, but it's like you convincing yourself you're going to die because you're going to fall asleep. You know, basically it's like a psychosis thing.
Krakatoa.
I don't know.
Remember that it's like in all the history books about that one town where they show up and the entire settlement had disappeared, like everybody had just like up and left, and there was only like one thing written or like carved into a tree. I don't think it's Krakatoa. I forgot what
Chapaway.
It was. No. No, Chapaway. Yeah, there you go. Archive 81.
Some of the hits here at the Skeleton Boys. And the other thing is like, I think that Mark Patton as an actor, I think is not very good in this. And I mean, he's not giving any favors either, as he's not a very interesting or compelling lead. And he's sure he's not giving any favors either, because the script probably was not very good. some of that's, I see it more as like a 50-50 thing. Yeah, and all around,
it is kind of fun to have our first born male scream queen.
Yeah,
which is kind of fun.
No, yeah, absolutely. I don't want to take. I'm not trying to like dismiss anything of it. I'm just like trying to come from the perspective of like, what is the movie that we're watching, instead of you know, the more critical analysis part of it, which I actually do enjoy. Like, I love that all these things. It's so wild that all of these different things were taken from a sequel movie like Nightmare on Elm Street. It's just a weird thing that happened. The other thing I want to say is that, like, I think that, like, just it looks cheap. It's a cheap, fat, it's a very cheap looking movie all around. So, and I think that was do with a lot of like poor direction of it. But
yeah, I actually disagree. That's why I thought a lot of the things I saw were very clever. And I was like, whoa, like, I think I understand what you're saying. Like, some of the things look very sitcom-y.
Yeah, it looks...
Like the bird blowing up and shit like that. But then there is like an amazing, in my opinion, amazing attention to detail to a bunch of things, which I thought was fun.
I think like this movie had a trouble with the mood it was setting, which is more of an abstract thing, right? But like, just like, there were so many things that were...
But super fair, yeah.
Like... lit kind of like, I don't want to get into like the technical side of it. I don't think that's as relevant to this review, but I just feel like totally it was fair. Yeah. I just feel like just it's not a very pretty looking movie compared to what Wes Craven has done, or, you know, it's probably not fair to compare it to Wes Craven, but it's the obvious comparison because it's the sequel to the one Wes Craven just did. So that's kind of like a way to compare it. So, but yeah, so it's just, and so those are kind of like the minor, I have problems with this movie, you know? But it, like, I really do like that there's an interesting nugget of an idea here where that Freddy tries to come back into, and he's using this kid, he's like torturing this kid to come back into and start killing, you know, people again and stuff like that. Like, that's a really fun idea.
I had like a fun little theory about the beginning, because the cold open introduces these two blonde girls on a bus with our protagonist in the bus as well. But it's a dream sequence where Freddy is the driver, which I think is the first time we see Robert Englund outside of America.
Yeah.
He's a bus driver. Mm-hmm.
It's just funny how much it pops into, like, up. Basically, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but like, yeah, it's just funny how many times he pops up in these movies, you know, without makeup. But yeah.
Randomly. Yeah. But he drives them into like what I'm assuming is supposed to be like the threshold of hell or something, in the dream. And the two girls are kind of hovered in front of our protagonist. I keep calling him protagonist. His name is
Jesse
Walsh, right. And how you could gather that he went through those two girls first before he got to him, but you could also maybe, I don't know, assume Freddy Krueger was also gay, because I think a lot of the undertones were supposed to be meant towards like him sexually kind of abusing Jesse the entire time before he takes over his body. And I thought, like, man, that's a pretty badass idea, actually. And the idea that he chooses who his next like sort of vessel to like kill other people is supposed to be.
So we can even, would it be fair to say he picked him because he saw his insecurity, his deep unidentified sexuality?
To say, but I mean, I think the obvious answer is like everybody wants to fuck Jesse. So why not Freddy Krueger too?
Because I think there is something to that, where like Freddy Krueger does kind of prey upon your insecurities, and his insecurity is not knowing his fears. It's that he doesn't know his sexuality is right. That's, he's a young kid, doesn't know he's gay yet. So that kind of makes sense. That tracks why Freddy would pick him and use him.
Even though the hottest jock was right there, he was about to help him figure it out, and then Freddy had him kill him. Which I think, in my opinion, they could have played that reaction to like Jesse killing Grady a little heavier. Like, he could have been a little more distraught about it. And like Grady maybe could have been a little more like, I'm very emotional about the whole thing. I mean, they still kind of did, though. Like, it was very interesting to be like,
yeah.
Grady's like, what the hell are you doing here? Why are you here? And he's like, oh, I need you to do this. You think I'm crazy? And he's like, no, it's fine. I'm like, okay. Sure.
Just watch me when I sleep.
let's pretend you guys don't love each other, like, a lot.
Yeah, no, it... Yeah.
Because as soon as Grady's dead, he's like, okay, I guess I'm going to go with
now. I'm evil forever. I'm going to kill everyone. Yeah.
I guess Lisa's cute now.
No, they
didn't have a thing for the super rich girl, but.
There's something really wild about the fact that, like, he literally was, like, in the act of trying, you know, almost having sex or some kind of sexual act with the Lisa character, and then runs to Grady, you know? Soon after he,
exactly,
that's like that's like, hello, like you're like running to a guy in the middle of the night because you think you're safer with him than you are with the woman. So it's like, dude, you're gay. So
the ultra rich woman, right, with like so many people around,
she's like the boring perfect, you know, teenage girl, you know, like just
super sweet, like loves him to
understanding
death,
like, gives him a lot of chances, wants to understand him, and like he's just like rejecting,
hey, you know people kill other people, that happens sometimes, it's all good, like I still love you.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking crazy, dude. That's
why missed opportunity again, several missed opportunities where Grady and Lisa had to together be the people to pull Jesse out of
that's true. And like the fact that, like, what is it that Grady dies instead of Lisa, it says a lot about the emotional weight of
80s horror movies.
Jesse, you know, who he really wanted to be with, you know? So, yeah, it's all there. We're not even, plus, like, that's just, like, the stuff we pulled from the movie, but there's the S&M scene, which we've kind of talked about.
Oh, my God. Which, yeah, they briefly at the beginning, another hint that Grady's gay. He's like, yeah, I hear Coach goes to an S&M bar, blah, 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 where they're doing, like, the plank position or whatever as a punishment.
Yeah.
And then how Jesse's like, he gets, like, because he's closeted, right? He's very, like, angry about, like, you have a problem with me, Grady? And he's like, nah, dude, I'm just trying to make small talk.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Grady, I'm just trying to see what he's
doing. Do you want to go to an S&M bar with me? Yeah, it would be cool if we just went, whatever, for a laugh. It would be totally cool.
Yeah, and Jesse's like, oh, no, I can't sleep. I shouldn't sleep. Let me go to that S&M bar.
Yeah, sweaty and my shirt and open. Like, yeah, let's go.
Oh, no. I'm so sweaty. I'm sorry. And then, of course, Coach was like, nope, you shouldn't be here. This is bad. And this is where I'm like, maybe Coach wasn't trying to punish him to degrade or hurt his feelings. Maybe Coach was like, this is the one student I really wanted. It all works out. He's into the same shit.
So
still makes him a pedophile.
No, yeah. And the thing is like, he literally is killed by balls flying at his face. How much more? He's like in the equipment room. He's getting like tennis balls, baseballs, basketballs being fucking fling at his face.
Well, no, that's not even, I need to play out the rest of the scene. So he gets thrown into the shower room where Jesse is
tied up.
Shower.
Yeah.
Tied up, pinned against the wall. And then
naked.
Several towels slap his ass.
Butt naked. Yeah.
Like random floating towels slap his ass really hard. Like a gratuitous amount of slaps, I should say. Before Freddy comes in and finally kills him.
Right. Through.
And I was like, I'm so.
Jesse, though, because Jesse's naked, his coach naked, being tied up, naked, being slapped and being.
And then in my head, I'm always like, what if, like, here's what I think sometimes watching certain horror movies from the 80s. I'm like, what if Gaspar Noé or Lars von Trier did this movie? Would they make this a rape scene? I think they would.
Yeah. No, yeah. 100%.
Like Jesse coming to like, oh no, I just raped and killed the coach or whatever. I'm like, oh my God. Which this is where, you know, if you're a horror fan, your head is just fucked up in general. But yeah, this is also what I think of Gaspar Noé and Lars von Trier.
No, yeah. What, you know, Lars von Trier did make a horror movie with Willem Dafoe.
Antichrist? I was gonna say if arguably every single one of his movies is a fucking horror movie.
I mean,
the same with Gaspar Noé. I'm like, dude, when people try to explain, like, no, he's like, his movies are really, really good. I'm like, yeah, if I feel like having a headache watching a fucking intro to a fucking movie, sure.
Yeah, that's true. It could be
like
a bit
into the void. I'm like, oh my God, dude, this
very indulgent. Yeah.
Yes.
To say the least.
Initially, it's always like, oh, this is really good. I can't watch it. It's too much. And then you rewatch it and you're like, wow, this guy loves the taste of his own private parts. Anyway.
Okay. Let's move on.
I digest.
You digested whatever your private parts. Yeah.
I digest. Yeah.
Do you have any other things you want to touch upon this movie?
No, I don't think so. Other than, in case you were wondering, scientifically, it only takes 97 degrees to make a parakeet explode.
So, that's
in case you're wondering,
plausible.
According to this movie.
Oh, I mean, it feels 97 degrees in this room and I want to explode. So,
hey, do you recall ever seeing parakeets in South Texas? Exactly, because they all blew up.
They all blew up.
That's true. Because it is consistently like 110 degrees year round.
How do you explain those Rio movies? Aren't they? in hot climate weather.
It's really funny. According to the rest of the world, very, very excessive heat. Temperatures are like 88 degrees, but we're from South Texas. So. That's why I'm not even going to talk about Florida. Nobody cares about Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Just kidding. We all love Florida.
You know what we didn't get, John? I don't know if you have any notes of this, but we didn't get any quotes from Freddie.
Oh, there are not too many.
Okay.
Once we get further, because Dream Warriors had a bunch of them, but they weren't very interesting.
Just
like one of them was just die, like, which is like, okay, I'm not going to fucking tell anybody that. This one, he doesn't really have one-liners in this one.
No.
Except for my favorite one is when he's presented himself to like that party, which I thought that scene was fucking cool, by the way, even though it doesn't make any sense that he's outside of the dream world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was still very cool to see him like fuck up a bunch of teenagers at a party.
Yeah.
It's like the equivalent to the only kind of good thing about the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie when he kills all the influencers.
Yeah, yeah. That was cool, yeah.
You know? One dude for some reason tries to reason with him like, hey, we can help you, blah blah blah. I was like, why, dude? But he goes, help yourself, fucker, and he throws him into the barbecue pit.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not a whole lot of
there were a lot of glitzies in this movie.
Actually one of them's pretty good where he goes up to Jesse, and this is supposed to be one of like the very obvious homoerotic tones of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He goes up to Jesse and says, "You've got the body, I've got the brain."
Yeah.
Which in my head I was like, oh shit, did I miss a part where they fuck or something?
They totally did. They kissed. Yeah. They're in a relationship.
Which, another fun bit of really stupid trivia that somebody decided to add to these movies. Like in the trivia thing, like somebody was like, oh, I am clever enough to realize that Freddy Krueger's only kissed two people throughout the entire franchise. I'm like, who cares?
Yeah, a weird thing. Yeah.
Because not Meryl Streep kisses him. And that's what ultimately kind of kills him.
And then a woman's touch.
The power of love.
Yeah.
The power of straight love. you got to have that straight love in a horror movie or else everybody dies.
He killed that other girl. He kissed that other girl. The
that's what I was going to say. In the fourth one?
Yes, Dream Master, one. Yeah.
He's like, want to suck face? And
no! She's like real quick to say no, when she does it anyways.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. That would be my reaction. Like, no! Don't kiss me, Freddy!
Oh my god. Can you imagine, like, that was like one, like, I think I've mentioned this before, the one code that Freddy has in his life is like, he doesn't want to be a rapist.
But he wants.
So it's like, no! And he's like, fuck! And just like goes away.
He just squeezes these kids too tight. He wants to love them. He kills them.
He wants. And that's the thing. You coddle too hard, you will kill somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Freddy just wants to nurture. Because he was never nurtured himself. So he just wants to nurture. Unfortunately, he also likes to be efficient because he's also a very celebrated cook. Not a jab on a burn thing, right? Not the joke, but he's got a bunch of finger knives because it's quicker to dice up onions and carrots like that. And it's just, it never worked out for him.
He's a failed inventor, entrepreneur.
Yeah, and he just wanted to be the thing of people's dreams. Unfortunately, they're nightmares, but he wanted to be the dream guy.
Yeah, he's a dream guy.
He's misunderstood. That's the issue.
Yeah. Alrighty. Yeah, the last thoughts? Besides
that? No. No, I'll give this movie a score that will inevitably be much higher than yours.
You don't know that. We could be in the same ballpark.
Maybe.
Well, we won't know until after we hit the music.
How many sexy spooky bones will you give me?
don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Freddy's Revenge. What is it? Question mark. For the Noe's series. 8.8 sexy, spooky dream bones.
Yeah. I'll go 4. I'll do 4. We were different. Surprise. Yeah. I'll do 4. It's not my favorite, but
I'm gonna guess it's probably gonna be my favorite.
It is. I will concede it is the wildest one out of the whole thing. There's just like crazy. This movie was made. I will give it credit for that.
Yeah,
it's absolutely yeah. insane. How it got made? What's in this movie? What it all means? Can't believe they got away with it and it's made. But for me, it's not something that I would actively try to rewatch. So I'll give it 4.
I think I'm gonna rewatch the shit out of this, yeah. which is very strange. But yeah, the more I realize how kind of important this might be
mm-hmm.
to, like, let's say, like an LGBT community, the more I'm like, holy fuck, is Freddy Krueger the only? Oh no, I guess at the time the only gay horror icon we had at the time, but the Babadook is like up there for whatever reason.
Yeah. There's more, no? Isn't there?
I mean, not for whatever reason, but yeah.
Sleepaway Camp?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what else
do we think we gotta do some research and watch... Do some research and we'll watch the, you know, LGBTQ plus whatever horror icons. Something we can do.
Well, because you do know that Jason Voorhees is female, right? I'm just gonna start spreading lies about
it's like, wow, I really didn't understand those movies.
Leatherface, like,
oh yeah, that's true point, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has like the makeup,
yeah,
skin face. Yeah,
a lot of this is just irrational straight men's fear. but yeah, it gotta
and or like kind of like fucking Hellraiser.
Hellraiser's super gay. yeah. Bondage, yeah.
Clive Barker is a very openly out person. Yeah.
That's true.
That's right. I forgot.
Look at that. You can name almost all of them. You're naming like almost all of them are a little, could be considered, you know, LGBTQ friendly.
And this is why we love horror movies in the horror community.
Yeah.
And you don't see too many conservative people loving horror movies. Not that there's anything wrong with conservative people.
okay.
It doesn't matter. We love everybody.
Yeah. Maybe not conservative people, but alrighty. I'm sweltering. Alrighty. How many? Oh, wait. I'm reading the wrong part of the script. I'm trying to end the show.
It is funny that we've talked about ad nauseum how this is the gay Freddy Krueger movie.
Yeah.
And we did give it some sexy bones.
It's true. Spooky, sexy spooky. Yeah, we did.
8.8 sexy, stiff, hard, grabbing, sexy, spooky bones.
We're just being very clever with our innuendos here, John. We're
kind of like Freddy's Revenge. We're not Street Part 2.
Right. Okay. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.
Fred is coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. 5, 6, get your crucifix. 7, 8, we're dreaming with Fred.